friends. Welcome back to the Name Fossil Podcast. Man, this is week two, and do I have a guest for you? This is John Gordon. He's in the house. Great conversation about vision. Man, such a good guy. And I want to say he's my best buddy, but he's not really a best buddy. He's a bud. He's a guy who is becoming a friend. And so, what a great conversation. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. So let's get into it. Now it is recording, my friends. We are recording now. Well, friends,
they missed a great conversation.
Oh, you wanna tell them about it? Okay, so I got John Gordon on the air, and traditionally on a podcast, you're supposed to hit the audience with the bio. You know what I'm saying? But we just launched into a whole conversation. But so I gotta tell them about who you are. Okay, so John
Gordon. We don't need a bio.
Come on, man. You got 17 books. Bestsellers? Seriously? I'm trying to write my second, and you're like 17. I see him behind you.
17 bestsellers. I got 31 books, actually.
Shut up. Are you serious?
31. 17 bestsellers.
Oh, dude, you know what? I want to end this podcast, and I'm going to go.
And I don't mean that arrogantly, because it took the energy bus 5 years for it to become a bestseller. 5 years. And
oh, really?
Yeah, and now it's still a bestseller all these years later, so it still will hit the list. But you know, every time a new book comes out, because of the readership that I've developed over the years and the following, they buy the books, and that automatically gets it on the list. But you know, to me, it's not about being a bestseller. It's the fact how many people can you reach. But the cool thing is, like, it's one of my differentiators, right? How many people have written 17 bestselling books? So at least it allows me to, in this marketplace of busyness, and there's so many voices, and there's so many books. Well, at least I'm being prolific over time.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. And you said 31 in print.
31 books. Yeah. I have my 32nd coming out in May 20th, and it's called The Seven Commitments of a Great Team.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was coming out. It's on Amazon. So if those of you who want to pre-order it, you can do that. But hey, so going back to your bio, okay, obviously 17, 31, who's counting, but everybody is counting.
Well, clearly okay. I am, which I actually hate that I am.
Okay. So you're obviously sought after speaker, you're consultant to CEO.
You have an editor, right? So let's start over. I didn't even like that beginning. Can we start over?
Yeah, how do you want to start over?
I honestly hate that I shared the numbers. I don't like that. Like, I don't like that.
No, it was fun.
I don't like even talking about numbers. I really don't. I don't even like talking about numbers. But
I think you were just comfortable.
Books. I've written 31, so it makes it sound weird. I'm like, well, no, I've actually written 31 books.
Listen. I just had Tim Timberlake, your buddy. Okay.
Yeah, I love Tim.
Apparently, you go to his church, right? He's your pastor, right? Yeah. So yeah, I had him on and we were talking, and I don't know, he just asked me who's coming on next. And I was like, oh yeah, John Gordon. I don't know if you know this guy. And he was like, John Gordon? And so I was like, this is such a small world. So
I love Tim. Tim is a great, great man. And yeah, I've been going to his church. When he took over Celebration, I started going. Yeah. I never went beforehand, but when he took over, I started going, and I've loved it.
Oh man, that's great. I'll tell you what, he said, do you guys go on walks sometimes here and there? And
yeah, the other day we went on a walk and just talked and have these great conversations. We've done a couple of those now. So I don't have breakfast meetings. I don't have lunch meetings. I just like to have walking meetings. So
oh,
I invite
man,
people on walks, and you're talking and walking. It's great exercise, and
that's
you're having a great conversation.
That's your future is a mall walker. You're going to be a mall walker with people.
Mall walker? No. It's a pickleball player is my future. Not mall walker. We can talk while we play pickleball. I also don't have golf meetings. I have pickleball meetings.
Listen, Tim's not here to collaborate. No, this is so much fun. We met, let me just, for our audience. Okay. So we met, We met actually at an event, and then I saw you that you followed me on Twitter, now X. So back in the day, and I was like, who's this guy? And then I found out this guy is following me. So I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. And so I just want to know for the audience, we've known each other. We've been in the same circles. We've done speaking gigs together, I would say. I think the last one was, it was for FCA, what was it? Some dinner, right?
Yeah, it was like an FCA president's kind of weekend, I think.
Yes, that's it. I spoke the first night and then you spoke the second night. And so, but hey, so let's jump into it. Okay. So let me ask you.
Are you going to introduce me?
John Gordon. John Gordon, the guy who wrote a few books. That's the intro.
I'll take it. I love it. Okay, that's a great intro. That's all I want, actually. That's the intro I want, which is perfect.
The good thing is this is mostly a audio podcast because clearly behind you, they're all the books.
My wife actually makes paintings of each book when it's finished, of the cover. So those are paintings of each book.
You're kidding me.
And not all 31, but we have a bunch of them up on the wall.
You just brought up a number again.
Well, because only because I can't fit all 31 up there in the behind me. But,
okay.
These are a bunch of them. And I got to actually put The One Truth up. That's one of my newest books. And I think it's my favorite book. And yet it's not up there. So I got to put that up there at some point.
Yeah, you got to do it. And then I'll give you mine. Tomorrow Needs You. Like, see, I think you would write a book called that, honestly. So
I think it's a great title. And I really love the concept of it, because if you don't have hope for the future, then you're not going to take that one more step today, right? You're not going to keep living today if you don't have hope for the future. So when you believe in a brighter and better future, you then take the actions necessary to create it. So tomorrow does need you. So don't give up today. So yes, I could give a keynote on your book right now because it's what I love talking about. I really love pointing people towards their vision, towards their mission, towards their purpose, and then going forward with optimism and belief, and then overcoming the negativity along the way, those energy vampires that drain you, the negative thoughts that try to hold you back, the critics that try to stop you, but you just keep going towards that future, the tomorrow that needs you.
Yeah. So let me ask you, I mean, like, I know we're both at this place of realizing that it really is a beautiful vision. Like, it's the beautiful things that we put in front of us that give us the power to just go forward, to find another way forward, to move on, to keep on, to push back the negative thoughts. We agree. But, and we're here in this moment and how did you get here? Like, were you always this guy? Like,
Mr. Positive?
Yeah.
No. And that's what's so ironic for me that I do this work, because I was really negative. And I grew up in a Jewish-Italian family, a lot of food, a lot of guilt.
Oh, wow.
A lot of wine, a lot of whining. And my dad was a New York City police officer, undercover narcotics. And so when I started to speak, he said, I can't believe people actually pay you to speak. When you're a kid, we pay you to shut up. And so my dad was a character. But he really did say that. And really try to discourage me from speaking in the first place. So I grew up in many ways in a loving family, but also a lot of negativity. And I struggled with negativity, you know, as a young athlete, as a college athlete in my 20s. I met my wife, had our little kids. And then I lost my job during the dot-com crash. So I didn't know how I was going to pay the bills. I didn't know how I was going to support my family. And I am literally crumbling from the inside out. And my wife had enough of my negativity. She said, If you don't change, we're over. And that was a defining moment in my life. I wanted to stay married and I begged her to stay. I agreed to change. And that began my journey of positivity. I began researching ways I could be more positive. And this was during the emerging field of positive psychology. So now every day I'm practicing these ideas that I'm reading about. Again, it's a very early psychology, early discipline. But I'm doing these practices and they're working. And those walks of gratitude turned into walks of prayer. And as I began to pray more and practice gratitude, I literally started to feel a shift in my psyche, in my spirit, in my mind, in my soul. And also my wife really noticed the difference. And I then began to ask, what am I born to do and why am I here? And writing and speaking came to me during those, during those askings. Literally, so it was like, why am I here? What am I born to do? And writing and speaking came to me. And what was I going to write and speak about? Positivity. Like, who chooses to speak on this and do this work?
Right, right. But and you didn't have a platform of any kind, right?
I didn't at all, no. And what's wild is I began a weekly positive tip. And I would share one positive tip each week. And it was an e-newsletter back in 2002. No one had e-newsletters back then. So
again, I didn't even know they are.
Yeah, I had a marketing mind. I had been in the restaurant business trying to market and always, you know, fill up places. So I was thinking, all right, let me start sharing these tips. And I had five subscribers, my mother, my brother, my best friend from college. And I was sharing that weekly positive tip out. And then people started sharing it. And as they did, people started to reach out to me. I even began doing some talks, like some free talks. Eventually, I did like 80 free talks in the beginning.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, 80 free talks. 80. Sharing the message anywhere and everywhere. Whoever would listen and allow me to speak. And I would just go do that. And that got my name out there. And I began doing this work. And at first, I was the energy guy. And it was all about positive energy. And then as I got older, more mature, more serious, it became about positive leadership. And I know my purpose is to develop positive leaders who build stronger teams. Like I am, all in on like, that's on what I'm best at in terms of helping a leader build a stronger team. I think John Maxwell would probably be the father of leadership, right? But when it comes to building, helping leaders build teams, that's where I excel and have worked with the greatest coaches on the planet, the greatest leaders on the planet, actually helping them do that.
All right, well, let me ask you this, because you said a lot of things, and I want to say, so first, when you made the shift from cynicism, right, to like from even your past, like, hey, I grew up in this, but I don't want to create this. So you got a ultimatum in a sense where like, hey, listen, I'm out if you don't change from your wife, right? But then you saw something that you did not want to repeat. Like you saw the past of what your family was, and you're like, no, I don't want to create this. So I see another future for us, for my kids, for my family, for myself. So I'm going to do whatever it takes to create that future. Cause you had that vision, right? You had that vision and you begin to create it. So let me ask you this though. Okay. I hope this makes sense. Does vision creates itself when you go after your passions, or does what comes first, do you think? Or do you,
you're never given a vision without the power to make it come true. Richard Bach said that you're never given a vision without the power to make it come true. So I believe God gives you a vision and the power to make it happen at the same time.
So and passion, same thing.
No? I think it's the power. Yeah. The desire, the passion. I would say passion comes from desire. I have this desire, and that desire drives your passion. You could also say your passion drives your desire. I mean, who knows which comes which, like the chicken or the egg? But I do believe that when you have a vision and you start to move towards it, if you don't have the purpose, you're not going to have the fuel to keep going. If you don't have the passion, you won't have the energy and the drive to keep going. So I think passion and purpose are essential. And I believe that, you know, I don't think you necessarily create your passion. Like you're either passionate about it or you're not. Like I realized when I was speaking about health and wellness, I really wasn't passionate about it. It didn't energize me. I loved learning about it, but when I taught it, I wasn't as passionate about when I talked about positive mindset. You put me on stage talking about positive mindset, I could talk hours about mindset, and the same thing about leadership. So I know like mindset and leadership are what I love the most, and I'm passionate about it. But I think it's from the inside that I have it. It's not something I gathered and found outside of me.
Oh, okay. All right. So like based on what you just said, so would you say that like people need to have like when you say have a vision, you don't really see everything, right? So like when you said, hey, what am I supposed to do in life? And you were like, write and speak, right? Wasn't that it?
Yes.
But you had a glimpse. So I mean, God gives us vision. I think sometimes people go, I don't have any vision, because they go, I don't see the picture. I don't see the whole thing, right? You don't see now, you just see the possibility. So it's like pursuing the possibility. And if you move towards it with your passions and powers, and then it starts unfolding. It's like getting closer to something that was already there in a sense, but you get to see, like you're saying right now, you're like, hey, as I move forward, I realized I'm not this, I'm that. I'm really passionate about this. I want to be really the guy that people go to when it comes to creating high capacity teams. That's my thing. Now, you didn't know that. You didn't know that starting off, right?
No, you're right. That evolved, and at times it evolves. I really believe it's almost like a lens. As you're saying this, I'm getting the picture, which is funny. I'm getting the picture of a lens. And what I'm seeing with this lens zooms in and zooms out. So, and you get more and more clarity right. As time goes on. The greatest gift a leader can give their team, their country, their community is clarity.
Yeah.
Here is where we're going. Right. And here is why we're going there. And this is what we're here to create. And this is what we're here to build. And this is what you're going to do to make it happen. See, clarity leads to focus action. So I would say for me, I knew I wanted to inspire and encourage as many people as possible, one person at a time. That was my initial vision and mission. Inspire and encourage as many people as possible, one person at a time. So it started with that. How am I going to do that? All right, through books and through speaking. Okay, I know that. Then as I started to do the speaking and the books, you start to get more clarity on what it is you really want to write about,
right?
What you want to say. Initially, it was the energy bus. And then it became all these other books, The Carpenter and Training Camp and The Seed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then The Power of Positive Leadership in 2017, 2018, The Power of a Positive Team. And then it's more recently, Difficult Conversations Don't Have to Be Difficult. It's The One Truth, which is like my latest thoughts in terms of how thoughts work and oneness and separateness. The more connected you are, the more one you are, the more powerful you'll be, the more separate and divided, the weaker you'll be. So what I would say is like, I literally have this incredible clarity now of why all the books that I wrote in the past, why they worked and helped teams and organizations, why they had an impact. The One Truth actually explains it all. So The One Truth is like the ultimate clarity. Once you see The One Truth, you see the power that drives everything. It's the one thing that explains everything. Right. So you're right. As I've been maturing, getting older, thinking about things, I'm having more and more clarity. And then it's like, okay, I'm going to write the 7 commitments of a great team. What is it that drives teams to be great?
Right.
It's not talent always. It's commitment. You've got to make these commitments. Right. All right, what are they? You start thinking about what they are. So you're right. So now there's a zooming going on where I'm seeing it so clearly and so focused. Right. And then it's the minute detail. Like when you're beginning,
you see a
big picture, and excellence is all about, and mastery is about starting to see the fine details and the little nuances and the things that make it work and make it better. And so that's where I am now. I'm a much better writer now than I was years ago. And yet the energy bus sells more than all the other books combined. And I wrote that book when I was 35 years old, which is wild, right? So that's a funny thing as well. I think this new one, The 7 Commitments, is my best writing ever. Like it flowed so well. Awesome. I wrote it in 16 days. 16 days I wrote this book. Yes. And
I mean,
my son
said— Did you write it or did you say it, write it?
No, I typed it. I typed it 16 days.
Oh my God.
Finished the book in 16 days. And the dialogue, the flow, the commitments, the lessons, the interactions between the characters, because it's a fable. And it just flowed. My son said I shouldn't tell people that because they're going to think it's not a good book. No, it read so, flowed so well. It reads so well. I went back and read. I'm like, man, I didn't have to do a lot of corrections. I'm like, how did I write this?
I was in the zone, right?
I was in the flow. And I had such clarity about what I wanted to write. So you're right. So I think over time you become more clear, because I didn't know leadership and positive leadership was going to be my thing. It was initially positivity.
And now it's
positive leadership. Right. And now I realize it's about positive leaders who build stronger, more united, connected teams. Yeah. And now we have a new mission statement for a company. It's literally to develop positive leaders who make a positive impact in every business, school, organization, team, and community around the world. So now my job is to literally develop positive leaders everywhere, equip them, develop them so that they can go impact their teams and organizations and communities. And I know that, and that's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life.
Yeah, man, that is awesome. That's awesome because you're going back to your first love, which is positivity, you know?
Yes.
Because you said, you could talk for hours about that. Let me ask you this, though, in what you just said. Like, do you think, though, that that people mistake certainty for clarity so often, and that's why they don't move forward? You know, I don't know. I mean, like, I find myself sometimes, like, it's a lesson I learned long time ago, and that is, you know, as leading a Mosaic and leading people and all that, I was clear about what I wanted to do, but I just wasn't certain, you know, that it was going to work. So I would delay. Do you know what I'm saying? I would delay communicating the vision because I'm like, I don't think it's going to work. Like, I don't know if it's going to work. Like, you know, it's like in the scriptures, you know, Jonathan, one of the guys, he's going after, he motivates his armor bearer and he says, hey, let's go fight these Philistines. And he goes, and the way he motivates him, he says, hey, let's go over. Perhaps the Lord will, you know, work on our behalf. Like, it's like, perhaps. And that's not really motivating. Like, perhaps, I don't know. Maybe he'll do it. But sometimes I feel like people go, well, they get caught up in like all the things that will not work. Like, I mean, you had to, you know, and I think.
Well, sounds like you're talking about certainty of a failure is what you're really talking about. Like, you have this certainty that it's not going to work.
Right.
So then you don't go forward with it. If you have certainty that it will, you're going to take the steps. Again, going back to your book, Tomorrow Needs You. Well, if you really believe in that future and you believe that there's hope there and there's accomplishments there, you're going to have a certainty to keep going. If you feel like it's worthless and it's hopeless, then you're not going to want to take that step. You're going to retreat from life instead of taking it on. I think that's where faith comes in. I don't think we're ever really truly certain about anything. I think we can't say we truly know. Like, I say this and I don't know what tomorrow brings, right? I don't know what 5 years are going to, 5 years will bring for me. Like, I can look at my life now. There are things I thought would happen, haven't happened. And there are things that have happened that I can't believe it have happened. So you just don't know what tomorrow brings. No. So I never really live with certainty. It's not about the fixed mindset. It's about the growth mindset. And it's knowing that step into it.
Yeah.
Have the faith. And I think the more faith you have, that causes you to act. And then the faith and the certainty of, even if it doesn't go well, I'm still going to keep going forward. I think that's key. Like, we're about to embark on a new opportunity, a new initiative within our company to develop positive leaders. And I'm basically saying, like, it may not work, but guess what? It's part of the mission. And if it's part of the mission, I got to do it. Yeah. The alternative is not an option. So whether it works or not, I have to do it because I'm not doing something else that could make money or more money because that's not what I'm supposed to do. So I'm willing to take the steps that may not work, knowing that even if it takes me 10, 20 years, eventually I believe it will work. See, I just said eventually I believe, not certain it will, but I have the hope and the faith that it will. So I want people to listen. Yeah. When you have hope and you have faith, and it's not blind faith, it's not blind hope, but when you have hope and faith and optimism and belief, that causes you to act. And that really is the main driver of grit. We talk about grit. What really drives grit? Right. It's hope, it's faith and belief. And I would add one more word. It's love. Because you have love.
Really?
When you love something, you keep pursuing it. When you love your family, you don't quit on them. When you love what you're doing, you're going to keep working.
That's true.
Great at it. So love actually is the main driver of grit. Love drives grit. And because you love it, you keep on working towards it. And then the hope and the faith and the belief are a big part of grit. So everyone talks about gritty and they're thinking like, I got to be gritty. I got to grind it out. Yeah, you do have to be, you know, someone who perseveres. You have to be mentally tough. But what drives mental toughness? It's actually love, because love casts out fear. So the more you focus on love, fear dissipates and fear no longer has control over you. And the love propels you forward. So love,
love it.
Faith, belief, all essential for the journey.
Yeah, yeah, so true. All those three things you mentioned there, I don't think the human spirit can live without faith, hope, and love. You know, that's why the scriptures say, this is it. This is it. It comes down to those three things.
That's why I think your book is so important, because your book is basically saying we have to have hope, you know, for tomorrow. Tomorrow needs you. And so your book is going to ignite people's spirit. It's going to fuel their soul with hope, and that hope will allow them to create whatever they're meant to create.
Yeah, I hope so.
I believe it.
Yes, I believe it.
I'm certain. I'm certain.
I'm mostly certain that it's going to do that.
You know what's funny thing? I'm more certain a lot of times about other people than I am myself. Like when I meet people, I'm like, oh, you got this. I know you could do this. This is why I work with so many athletes, because I believe in them so much of what they could accomplish.
And they borrow that. They take that. Well,
leadership is a transfer of belief. So you believe, but does your team believe? You believe, but does that player believe? As a parent, you believe, but do your kids believe? You got to constantly instill them with that belief, transfer that belief to them.
I love that. Yeah, I love that, because I think of, like, you know, the word encouragement, we use it all the time. Oh, you know, be an encouragement. Thank you for that encouragement and all that. But if you stop and just think, what does encouragement mean? It means I am putting courage into you.
Yep.
Like I am, like you said, like when a leader puts courage into their teammate, or you can remove it, and that's called discouragement.
Yes.
You take it. You know what I'm saying? Yes. So I'm going to call you names. I'm going to blame you. I'm going to call you out. I'm going to make a scene. And I just took away any certain courage, hope, whatever. I just took it out from you. Yep. So when I start thinking of that way, I go, hold on. What is this? Is it putting something in people? Am I putting the right things in people, or am I taking away the right things? You know what I'm saying? Am I putting in, or am I taking on the wrong things and putting in the right things? I mean, it's all about that. So I love that. Let me ask you though, let's talk about the importance of people, because based on your book that's coming out right in May, I mean, it's about, so how important are people?
I mean, I was going to make a joke there, but I think they're very important. Like I realized during the pandemic, when I was alone by myself so much, I thought, I really miss people. I realized that I loved people. And, you know, when I talk to leaders and teams, I always say this: no one creates success alone. We all need a team to be successful. You really do need others. You were made for relationships. So whoever's listening to this, you were made for relationship, and you were made for connection. And when you don't have that relationship and you don't have that connection, you're not going to feel as whole, because you're meant to be part of others and they're meant to be part of you. We heal in a loving relationship. That's what relational psychology tells us. You heal in a loving relationship.
Yeah.
So think about that. If you are in a loving relationship, that's where the healing takes place. So when I have someone who believes in me and loves me and I feel that love, I am healing. When I'm going to work and I have a supportive team and we're sharing ideas with each other and we're sharing our commitment to each other, I heal. People say, can you heal at work? Yes. The workplace can be a very healing environment if there's love. Sports teams. I believe that coaches have the opportunity to be healers. You bring all these young men or women into the program. And when they're all on your team now, you have an opportunity to help them grow. And the love for each other heals. This book, Seven Commitments, this team starts to unite together. And they have a team building specialist, Coach Amy, that's working with the team. And they do some exercises. And you follow this team as they go through this journey of trying to be a winning team and losing some games and the issues they deal with. But they actually go through some exercises that bond them as a team. And you see how it plays out psychologically in their own lives, and also the team dynamic. And this was based on all my work with teams, and I was able to bring that into the story and into the fold. And you're going to follow this team. And the goal is that you'll realize this and say, oh, I could do this with my team. I could help my team get better. So yeah, we need people. Relationships are the foundation upon which winning teams and successful teams are built. And we also know that they're the foundation of a healthy life. Your longevity is determined by the quality of your relationship. So if you have great relationships, you're going to live longer. If you're alone and isolated and disconnected, you're going to feel weak and powerless. And this goes back to the one truth. What I wrote about in the one truth is that when you feel separate and divided and disconnected, you actually will have more anxiety. The root for the Greek word of anxious means to separate and divide. All mental health disorders report feelings of isolation, disconnection, and separation. And what is bipolar? Two poles, separation. What is schizophrenia? Split mind is what it means, a separation. Wow. So think about the pandemic. People were so isolated and disconnected that they had a lot of mental health issues because they were never meant to be alone. You're meant to be with other people. So yes, relationships are that important.
Wow. Okay. So in your book, that's coming out, there's a quote from your fictional character that says, "Teammates are forever." It's the coach, right?
Okay. Yeah, the coach, Coach Richie on his deathbed says that to the main character, Tim.
Okay, so when you say teammates are forever, that implies that relationships are meant to not just be, that relationships, deep relationships, don't have to be for a season. They could be forever. It's not like, hey, we played together, we worked together, we lived together, we were in this season together. There's a difference between that kind of like, you know, I have a relationship with you because we work in the same place. That's not really a relationship. You know, or we go to the same gym, or we go to the same church, or we have the same stage of life. No, this is like, no, I'm in this relationship for you, not what you do or where you are in life, but because of you, right? Like, that's what you're talking about. That's the teammates that are forever, correct?
It's so funny that you said that, because as I wrote in the book, Tim is trying to figure out, are teammates really forever? Mm. And what he says towards the end is that, no, teammates are not forever. It's the teammates. Huh. It's the teammates who love you and care about you and are committed to you. That is forever. Because what is forever but an eternal moment is actually forever. Appearance is temporary. Essence is eternal. So think about it. In the moment when you're loving someone, that love that you're giving them and caring about them and that commitment you show them in that moment, that's the forever moment. And that is what lasts forever. We're all going to die. Mm. And you're trying to win a trophy. You're trying to win that sales award. You're trying to hit those numbers. But next year, there are new numbers. Eventually, the numbers fade away. Eventually, the trophy's tarnished. The trophy breaks. But what lasts? It's the relationships that were founded and built upon love. So you and I, like you said, could be in the same work environment, but are we really forever? No. But you know, if we love each other and we're committed to each other and we go to battle together, man, that bond we created, that's what's going to be forever.
Man, that's so good. So good.
I'm so glad you perceived that and asked that.
Oh man, thank you. So let me ask you this question. As I was thinking about this, I have from time to time, you know, as I'm speaking and all that, I've asked this question to people sometimes, and I've said, you know, what do I need to do to make you quit on your dreams? Like, what do I need to do?
Yeah.
What do I need to do? And so the question really is, huh?
Do you want me to answer that or no?
yeah. I want you to, because I want to, the energy behind that is that, you know, you've got resistance. You've got the enemy of our lives. We've got people. We've got situations, whatever. We have offense. All kinds of things will give us a reason to quit on our dreams. And so I'm, you know, because you've worked with so many people, you've worked with so many people in this field. Why do people do that? I mean, you've seen people's success and you've seen people quit too, I'm sure.
I'm going to give you 5 D's. From the one truth. 5 D's are the reason why we give up on our dreams. Okay. The first D is doubt. It starts with a seed of doubt. and it grows into a forest of uncertainty. So it starts with the overthinking, the worrying, and all those negative thoughts, all the doubt. The second D is distortion, and distortions are lies. Distortions are a distortion of the truth, and negative thoughts are lies. And so the second thing that keeps you from your dreams and from the future and from your hopes are those negative thoughts that are coming in telling you you're not enough. The future is hopeless. You should give up. You weren't made for this. You're too weak. Right. You're too poor. You're of this nationality. Whatever it may be, those lies will come in and they will accuse you. They will attack you. And I often ask people, do those negative thoughts come from you? And they go, yeah, they're in my head. But here's the next question. If you believe your negative thoughts are coming from you, who would ever choose to have a negative thought? Would you ever choose a negative thought? No, you wouldn't. No one ever would.
Right.
So they're not coming from you. You're not the thoughts you think. You're the thoughts you believe. And so don't believe the lies that they tell. So that second D of distortion is a key reason why people give up. But you know what the distortion leads to? The third D, discouragement. We don't give up because it's hard. We give up because we get discouraged. You said it earlier. The courage comes out of you and you're no longer encouraged. You're discouraged and that leads to despair. But that's not one of the D's, but you are discouraged. And so you just give up because I'm so discouraged. And I would say that's like the main cause of why people give up on their dreams, because they get discouraged and then they feel hopeless. And then they wind up giving up on life itself. Like they actually want to give up on their own lives. They're so discouraged and so hopeless. The fourth D is distractions. We get distracted on the things that are bright and shiny or the things that are not good for us and not meant for us. So that keeps us from our dream and from what matters most. And then the fifth D is divide. And as I said earlier, the root for the Greek word of anxious means to separate and divide. We have a spiritual force. It is evil. It is negative. Yeah. It's an enemy. And it's always trying to divide us and separate us from ourselves, from relationships and the love of others, and the love of God. You are made for connection with your Creator. And so when you're connected to your Creator, you do feel hopeless. You do feel positive. You do feel encouraged, because in that oneness, you receive power and belief and hope and confidence, and all the greatness of God is now moving through you because you're now connected to your Creator. When you're separate from God, you're weak, alone, isolated, disconnected. Everything comes down to the oneness and separateness. And so we give up on our dreams because we feel disconnected. We feel discouraged because of the distortions, the distractions, and then the doubt. And it all ties together to cause us to give up on what is truly meant for us. It wants to keep us from our destiny.
Oh, another D.
Because what happens is those five D's, when you can add despair, that leads to the D of defeat. See, we give up and we are now defeated. But if we can overcome the five D's, we don't go through the defeated stage. We move towards the destiny stage. And we overcome and move towards that.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. You know, in my book, I talk about this incident that defined my life. Honestly, another D word. So I was, I came here. I was born, raised in Kuwait. You know, as a Pakistani. So my parents are Pakistani. I was born, raised in Kuwait, lived there. So I speak Urdu. That's my first language, but grew up speaking Arabic as well. And then in 1990, the Gulf War took place. Saddam invaded Kuwait. And so we were decided to stay. So we were there the entire time. And in 92, I got a chance to come to the U.S. On a visa. And I did not know what I was going to do. My brother was already here and I was trying to get into college, but I didn't go to finish high school. You know, I was in a war for a couple of years. And I was Muslim, you know, and I came here, and then just like 3 weeks later, I had a radical experience with Jesus. Like it was not in the church. I didn't know Christianity. It was just very supernatural. You know, I talk about it often, but anyways, that led to me like knowing I was supposed to, I was supposed to go in college, but I couldn't get, I was an international student, but without the money, you know what I'm saying? Like I didn't,
yeah.
And I wasn't that smart. I've got dyslexia and dysgraphia and dyscalculia. Like, I've got seriously, I've got all three, which is, you know, part of the why I wrote this book, but just because, I mean, there's so many reasons why I shouldn't be here, but or be in this moment, right, talking about a book that I'm writing. So, but you know what I realized is, like, I was, I needed to get, I needed to go graduate college, but I didn't have the money to do it. And I didn't qualify for a scholarship. And I decided to go to the president's office and ask for an appointment. And they were like, no, no. I mean, what do you want? And I'm like, I'm this kid. I'm got this. I was trying to figure out, because I'm an immigrant too, I was getting my my religious asylum in works. And all that to say, they just don't have scholarships for guys like me. And I wasn't that smart. So I was like, I mean, I was just barely passing grades, you know? And so I decided I'm going to show up to this guy's office once a week.
Love that.
And just come. And so I started just showing up.
So good.
And like a month later, they were like, are you, I just said, hey, I'm just going to sit out here. If he ever has the time, I'll come in and talk to him for 5 minutes. I'm just going to sit here and do my work. And then it was like, they knew me, my name. And a month later, you know, the assistant was like, hey, he's got 5 minutes. So I walked into the president's office and I said, hey, I'm Naeem. This is my story. I do not qualify for anything, but I really need to graduate. I really think, I mean, if there's any way you can give me anything. And he was like, so I've heard that you've been coming for the last month sitting here. And he was like, and I said, yeah, I said, I need help. And he was like, well, all right, I'm going to make a special scholarship for you. You just make sure you graduate.
Wow.
And he did. And it's the only reason I could have gotten, because my tuition was not out of state. Out of state is one thing. International is in a whole different level. So it's so expensive. And there's no way I was going to be able to graduate.
That's epic.
So I saw something, right? I saw something that I was like, I got to go after this. I got to do
it. Get a vision.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, sadly, there were so many people, and this is the question. The story ends with the question, is that there were people in my life that were like, no, you shouldn't do this. You're ridiculous to do this. Don't go back in there. Like, don't go, don't do this. Don't do this. No one does this. This is not how we do this. You know? And the question is, like, I know people are so important. But are there certain people you just need to like distance yourself? Like, did you distance yourself from people? Like the person you are right now, Mr. Positivity. I mean, you got to have eliminated some relationships, right?
Yes. Yep. And okay. I gotta finish with this answer, because I have to get on another podcast that I'm doing actually. So I want to close with this. Yes, there are energy vampires that I wrote about in the Energy Bus, and they will drain your energy. Yeah. And there are naysayers, and there are critics who don't see their best in you, see the best in you. They don't want the best for you. Yeah. You're going to deal with all sorts of negativity like that. And there are certain people that shouldn't be on your bus. Now, you invite everyone on. You give them a chance to get on. You love people.
Yeah.
But some people are not meant to be on your bus, and they don't get on your bus. And when that happens, you got to let them go. You got to let them go. You got to maybe even if you're the boss, you might have to let them go of the company, even though you give them a chance to succeed. If they're friends and family, you may see them a lot less. You don't have to get rid of them for your entire life, but maybe for a season or maybe for forever.
Right.
People who are narcissistic, who are egomaniacs, people who are focused only on themselves, who are wounded souls to the point where they're hurting others. Those are the people that you have to be wary of and be careful of. So I believe I live inviting everyone on, loving everyone, but knowing that I have to have discernment of who I allow to speak into my life.
Yeah.
Who's going to speak into my life and who's going to be part of my circle that will impact me and influence me. So I am very careful about that. Because over time in the past, I would let everyone on thinking everyone was great. And then you realize that some people do want to do you harm. And it doesn't mean they're bad people. They might be very wounded and hurt. But the idea of protecting yourself and creating boundaries is important. But like I said, I think the key is to first still love them first and give them a chance until they prove you wrong.
Right, man. Well, hey, thank you so much, John, for jumping on, helping spread the word of why tomorrow needs people, right? It needs them.
And
so,
you.
Hey, thank you so much. Awesome, man.
Tomorrow needs you, and I'm so glad you wrote the book, my brother.
Man. Appreciate you, bro. All right. Have a great day. Later. Bye.
Thank you for having me.